You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
People say, oh, historically it was a gold standard. Not true. Yes, gold was used more for international transactions, but it was not fixed. All right, it just floated. That's it. You always have these. It's why you see there's a silver-gold ratio. We look at a chart of a few hundred years, you see spikes and bottoms. Everything in life has a cycle to it. So you just can't fix it. Can gold be the medium of exchange again? Yes, no problem. All right, but you just can't fix the value.
Just before we get going, we just launched the official Silver News Daily Telegram. To kick things off, we're running a 10-ounce silver giveaway. Yes, real physical silver, not a voucher, not digital credits, actual bullion. This Telegram will be our new home for real-time silver discussions, market insights, collection picks, and everything precious metals. It's where the community truly comes alive. Here's how to enter the 10-ounce silver giveaway. Be subscribed to Silver News Daily on YouTube. Turn on the notification bell. Comment 10-ounce giveaway on 3 separate videos. Be an active member of the Telegram group and say hi. Once we hit 500 active Telegram members, we'll pick one lucky winner to receive 10 ounces of silver shipped directly to you. So get in early, stay active. They warned us, they told us the system was too big to fail, too strong to break. But now cracks are ripping through the global financial foundation, and the elites are scrambling while the public remains blind. Fiat currencies are dying before our very eyes. The BRICS nations are throwing down the gauntlet, ditching the dollar for a gold-backed trade revolution. And silver? It's sitting at the launch pad, ready to explode past $100 and $150, maybe even higher. If you think the chaos of the last few years was bad, you haven't seen anything yet. The financial meltdown that's coming will make 2008 look like a dress rehearsal. History is repeating itself, but this time, it's moving faster, hitting harder, and silver is the lifeboat nobody sees coming. Stay with me, because what you're about to hear could change everything you thought you knew about money, wealth, and survival.
Is moving reserves from dollars and euros. You know, China has been selling off euro debt. Japan just dumped 50 some billion of euros, euro bonds. And Europe is beating the war drums and over there. You really want to have any of their debt? You're not going to survive. You know, so whatever you have in European debt, it's going, you know, forget it, you know, roll it up, smoke it. You know, that's a bad hole. It's going to be good for. So that's why they're moving to gold. All right. So it's not because they think it's going to go up, it'll be 4,000 or whatever. They don't care if it goes down. That's not the issue. The issue is basically you definitely do not want to have, your reserves tied up in a currency that is your enemy. So, you know, China has been not excessively aggressive now that Trump's come to the White House, but they are still moving towards gold, only because it's neutral. All right. You can't really have a gold standard per se, like Bretton Woods, mainly because there is a business cycle. All right. So you can't fix gold. That was the whole problem. You fixed gold to $35, but you didn't limit the amount of dollars that you were creating. I mean, obviously, a three-year-old with a pocket calculator could figure out it's going to go bust at some time. And, you know, people say, oh, historically, it was a gold standard. Not true. Yes, gold was used more for international transactions, but it was not fixed. All right? It just floated. That's it. Rose and fell like everything else in life. You know, there was big inflation during the mid 19th century, because so much gold was found in California. You know, so the value of gold went down versus silver. You always have these. It's why you see there's a silver gold ratio. We look at a chart of a few hundred years, you see spikes and bottoms. Everything in life has a cycle to it. So you just can't fix it. Can gold be the medium of exchange again? Yes, no problem. All right. But you just can't fix the value. Because, you know, look, there could be a wheat shortage, climate, whatever, drought, and the price of wheat will double or triple. All right. This is the way history works. You know, the climate turned very cold up north, and then they moved south, and that became the sea people, and they overthrew all the Bronze Age people except for Egypt. So, I mean, you've always had these things historically. You can't find any century that's a flat line.
Silver has always been the underdog, the overlooked cousin of gold, quietly waiting for its time to shine. When you look back through history, silver wasn't just a secondary metal. It was real money, trusted by empires and civilizations for thousands of years. From ancient Greece to the Roman Empire, silver coins were the backbone of commerce and trade. Even in the early United States, silver dollars were the currency of everyday life. And now, as fiat currencies crumble under the weight of debt and corruption, silver's true power is about to be rediscovered. Unlike paper money, silver can't be printed into oblivion. Unlike cryptocurrencies, it doesn't vanish with a server crash or a regulatory crackdown. It is tangible, real, and recognized across the globe. And while gold captures the headlines, silver has quietly positioned itself for the biggest comeback in financial history. When the dust settles from the collapse that's coming, those holding silver won't just survive, they'll thrive. The clock is ticking, and silver's rebirth as the ultimate monetary metal is closer than anyone realizes.
Well, you have to understand what happened. The neocons were really running the Biden administration. As you said, they sent Pelosi over to, you know, wipe out the, you know, the change, the one China policy. But you also had Blinken, you know, pushing through with the sanctions on Russia. And I should point out in 2014, when Russia did go into Crimea, Obama tried that. He went to SWIFT, wanted to have them removed, and they refused. He said, you're not going to turn this into a political weapon. So they replaced the head of SWIFT in 2019. This guy does whatever he's told, you know. So this is how I would say that these neocons are stupid in the sense of they're focused only on defeating Russia. They have no concept of the economy, funding the debts, or anything of that nature. Just, I got to kill Russians. That's it. There's even a clip out of Lindsey Graham, you know, in a meeting with Zelensky saying, this is the best money we ever spent killing Russians. I mean, what? If you said that about blacks or Jews or something, that's a hate crime. You know, you'd be in prison for 20 years or something. But so by putting the sanctions on Russia, removing them from SWIFT, that was a red flag to everybody else. And then you have Blinken, this idiot, threaten China. If you help Russia, we'll do the same to you. You know, and so they go, oh, okay, no problem. So that creates BRICS. What is BRICS? It's really the division of the world financial system. So SWIFT was, everybody was connected, and was real globalism. Now you have two systems. So the main reason China and Russia have been accumulating gold is very simple. You go to war. What do they do? China owned up to 10% of the U.S. national debt. You think the U.S. would pay it? They'll default. All right. So they realize that you cannot have your reserve assets in the currency of your enemy. All right. So that's where gold's going. And look, I've speak to central banks. It's wrong to say, oh, geez, they're buying gold because they think it's going to go up. They're not investors. This has got nothing to do with that. What it is, they don't care if it goes down. It's basically neutral. So what they're doing is...
For decades, we were taught that the gold standard was this rock-solid anchor that kept economies honest and inflation in check. But as Armstrong exposes, that entire narrative is a lie. Gold was never truly fixed. It floated in value, responding to the tides of supply, demand, and geopolitical events. And if gold floated, then silver moved even more violently, riding the same waves, but with far more ferocity. This hidden truth changes everything. It means the so-called stability of the old system was nothing more than an illusion, and it means that silver's wild price swings aren't a flaw, they're its greatest strength. Because when confidence in fiat evaporates, the natural instinct is to rush back into assets that have survived every collapse, every empire, every regime change. Gold gets the first call, but silver gets the explosion. With the myth of a stable gold standard shattered, silver's raw, untamed volatility becomes a weapon, not a weakness. And in the chaos ahead, that volatility is going to be unleashed like never before.
So it just turned from hatred of communism to racism, I guess. I mean, look, Russia is more of a Christian country than probably the West. And they're not capitalists anymore. And they certainly, all this propaganda that, if Ukraine falls, they'll come take Europe and he wants to resurrect it. He's been there since 1999. I think if he wanted to invade and take Europe, it would have been a lot sooner than now. All right. He doesn't have too many years left in office. You don't wait till your last day. It's the Russian people don't want to conquer. These are old ideas. I mean, Khrushchev, we will bury you. That stuff was more or less, socialism is going to defeat capitalism. This was their dogma. They overthrew him. There was a major grain crisis in 1963. They had to buy grain from the West that showed their collective farming didn't work. You had the Cuban Missile Crisis 62, and they overthrew him in 64. Then Brezhnev came in, but there was an actual coup against Khrushchev. They thought he was erratic, nuts. there's even a movie I would recommend. I think it was called The Courier or something about there was a Russian colonel who was feeding information about the whole Khrushchev wanted to put missiles into Cuba. And that's how we knew about it. And he got caught and they executed him. But he was against Khrushchev because he also thought he was, erratic and a danger.
The silver-gold ratio has always been the market's hidden tell, a signal flashing in plain sight for those willing to read it. Historically, when the ratio reaches extreme highs, silver doesn't just catch up to gold, it overcompensates in a violent, breathtaking rally. Today, that ratio is screaming louder than ever. In calm times, the silver-gold ratio might hover around 40 or 50. But during moments of panic, when the world wakes up to the failure of fiat money, silver's price doesn't just rise steadily, it detonates. In 1980, when fear ruled the markets, silver didn't politely follow gold's climb. It catapulted from under $6 to nearly $50 in a blink. And again in 2011, his faith in paper assets cracked. Silver repeated the same stunning ascent. Right now, with the ratio at historically absurd levels, the setup is not just familiar, it's even more extreme. Every tick in that ratio, every delay in silver's response, is pressure building under a cap ready to blow sky high. And when it moves, it won't be a gentle rise. It will be a full force slingshot that shocks the world.
I would just recommend you can go on YouTube and Google up General Wesley Clark's 2007 speech. And he went to the Pentagon after 9/11. And he was shocked. They said they were going into Iraq and he asked, we've tied Saddam to 9/11. They said, no. he also came out and said he was told they intended to go into Iraq and conquer seven countries, all the former Soviet satellite countries in the Middle East. This is the neocons, which you talked about. It is deliberate. You'll also find McNamara's apology on YouTube before he died. He was the neocon that took us into Vietnam. And before he died, he said, look, I'm sorry, we were wrong. We thought Russia was behind it. He said, quote unquote, it was just a civil war. 58,000 Americans died for that one. You know, look, these people have waged wars constantly. And they just hate Russians and it doesn't matter. I was, I did get called in by, the Reagan administration back then. And I can tell you when Gorbachev hinted that he wanted to speak, Reagan wanted to go. And I know what they told him. All right. They couldn't say he was a communist anymore because communism collapsed. So they said you can never trust the Russian.
The illusion that central banks are in control is crumbling faster than ever, and the consequences are terrifying for anyone still clinging to fiat. Armstrong makes it brutally clear. The Fed, the ECB, the BOJ, they're all trapped. If they try to fight inflation by raising interest rates, they blow up the cost of servicing government debt, triggering a fiscal death spiral. If they print more money to paper over the cracks, they pour gasoline on the inflation fire. Either way, the result is the same. Total loss of confidence in fiat currencies. And when confidence breaks, the move into hard assets becomes a stampede. We've already seen the first tremors, gold pushing all-time highs, central banks hoarding physical metals, and quiet but massive accumulations happening behind the scenes. But silver remains the sleeping giant. When the public finally realizes that central banks can no longer save the system they created, silver won't just rise. It will go vertical. The instability that's gripping the monetary system isn't a glitch. It's the system's final, fatal feature. And silver is the exit door that's still wide open, but not for long.
No, they're trying to provoke it. look, I know some of these neocons. I mean, even Bill Kristol spoke at one of our conferences. And I can tell you that this is... Back in the 90s, I argued with him. He was talking about taking out Saddam Hussein, Assad, and Gaddafi, and would bring peace to the Middle East. I said, you're out of your mind. Have you ever been there? You know, we drew the borders. These are not countries. All right. They're, they still view themselves as tribes. I mean, you look at, there's Kurds, there's Sunni versus Shiite. In many respects, you needed somebody like Saddam Hussein to stop them from all killing each other. you removed him, and what do we got? We ended up with ISIS cutting off people's heads and stuff like that. That's the Middle East. And a lot of people don't understand it, but it's more or less, I mean, just look at Ireland. You have, Protestant versus Catholic. All right. Countries divided. That's what the Middle East is. Sunni versus Shiite. All right. Shiite is like Iran. The country should be run by the church. Sunni, you have a king, running like Saudi Arabia. So completely different philosophies. You find the same thing in Judaism, Catholicism, you name it. There's always the left and a right.
The global debt situation has reached a point of no return. And it's not just some distant problem for future generations. It's detonating right now. The United States alone has stacked up a mind-bending $34 trillion in debt, a figure so large it's impossible to truly comprehend. But the real horror show is global, with over $100 trillion owed worldwide across governments, corporations, and consumers. This isn't a rough patch or a temporary imbalance. It's a full-blown systemic collapse waiting to happen. And when the debt mountain inevitably crumbles under its own weight, currencies backed by nothing but promises will evaporate like smoke. That's where silver comes in. Silver doesn't rely on the credibility of a bankrupt government. It doesn't need a printing press to hold its value. In a world where trillions can be created with the push of a button and wiped out just as quickly, silver remains one of the few assets that can't be debased by political lies or financial engineering. As the debt crisis metastasizes into hyperinflation, defaults, and global monetary failure, silver isn't just an investment. It's a survival strategy.
All your central banks have actually lost control, mainly because the theories that we were all taught in school back, way back when, Keynesian economics. When he came up with that idea in the 30s, U.S. had a balanced budget. So it made sense if you raise interest rates or lower interest rates, it affected us directly. But today, the government is the biggest borrower in the room, and not just the U.S., but they all are. So they can't raise interest rates anymore to stop inflation, because then the government expenditures blow out. So they're actually trapped. And look, they know this is a confidence game. So they're not going to come out and say what I say, because they have to at least be perceived that they're in control. Back in the 87 crash, they started the G5 at the Plaza Court in 85. So we want the dollar down 40%. Okay. That's when I went to Reagan. I said, you're going to cause a crash. And, because they had sold like a third of the national debt to Japan. And I said, they're going to sell. Why? Because they're going to lose 40%. Don't you understand? Then they had the Louvre Accord in February of 87. They said, okay, that's enough. The dollar is going down far enough. The dollar continued to make lows. That's what ended up with the 87 crash, because it suddenly everybody back then said, oh, shit, the central banks really can't control this. And then the rumors were the dollar is going to fall another 40%. So everybody just started selling. And, I got called into the Brady Commission to investigate it. And I at least got them. If you read the Brady report at the end, it says, we think foreign exchange had something to do with it. That was the best I could get out of them. They're never going to come out and say, hey, the G5 caused this, this is the world we live in. It is all smoke and mirrors. And the real risk we have is when the public begins to realize that they can't control this. Then you get into this free fall type thing. I don't see the Fed being able to steer us out of this. We're in this recessionary trend, because we're all in this together. Europe is the worst. I know a lot of people keep talking.
While the world's eyes are glued to America's economic train wreck, Europe is quietly plunging into an even deeper abyss, and the consequence for silver could be explosive. Armstrong warns that Europe's financial system is more fragile, its banks more overleveraged, and its political situation far more combustible than the United States. War clouds are gathering over the continent, inflation is ripping through economies once thought stable, and public trust in both governments and currencies is evaporating. If Europe fractures under the pressure, whether through economic collapse, political revolts, or military conflict, the global rush into safe haven assets will make past crises look like a warm-up act. And silver, often overlooked in times of normalcy, becomes a lifeline in times of chaos. As capital flees from collapsing European institutions and investors desperately seek anything real, the demand for silver will surge in ways the market is completely unprepared for. The coming European crisis isn't just another chapter in the global financial story. It could be the trigger that sends silver into a historic, uncontrollable breakout.
About all the dollar is going to crash is that, okay, what are you going to do? Buy euro? you're talking about big money. We're not talking about just gold. I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars. You got $34 trillion in U.S. national debt. And globally, you've got over $100 trillion in sovereign debt. So what I'm concerned about is that Europe is pushing towards war because they know the end is near. You know, I got dragged in to all this stuff largely. I had a client who was a executive VP at Franklin National Bank back in 73. And he knew that I understood trading, etc. And he asked me, would you come in and take a look at this? He says, I think we have a currency problem, but I'm not sure. And Franklin National Bank was the first bank to fall after the collapse of Bretton Woods. They actually were the founder of MasterCard. So that failure after that, every time there was a currency problem, it was like, go get that guy that did that one. You know, so I got dragged into everything. I mean, from, you know, forming the G5, I was asked to come into that. I mean, when they were forming the Euro, they came to me. I met with them. Explain, okay, this is how we create a currency. And all the propaganda they were putting out was all a lie. Oh, we're all going to pay the same interest rate. We'll eliminate volatility. And Europe is a bigger economy. We'll beat the dollar. And it was all propaganda. The problem was that Helmut Kohl knew, and he admitted before he died, that if he allowed the German people to vote, he would have lost 7-3. So he took Germany into the euro, but he insisted no consolidation of the debt.
War isn't just a humanitarian disaster. It's a silver supply chain catastrophe waiting to unfold, and the markets are completely asleep to the danger. Every new conflict accelerates demand for silver in ways few investors realize. It's not just about weapons and military tech, though modern defense systems are packed with silver for its unmatched conductivity and resilience. It's about the ripple effect through every industry critical to national security: energy grids, advanced electronics, aerospace, communications. When a nation prepares for war, silver moves from a nice-to-have industrial metal to a must-have strategic resource. And today, with tensions spiraling across Europe, Asia, and the Middle East, governments are quietly stockpiling the very materials they'll need to survive the next conflict. Silver sits at the heart of that rush, squeezed between exploding industrial demand and a mining sector already struggling to keep up. When military priorities collide with investor demand, the supply of silver for private ownership will dry up almost overnight, and the scramble for what's left will ignite a price move like nothing we've ever seen before.
If you ever brought a bottle of Russian vodka to dinner in Kiev, they would smash it over your head. Yugoslavia, I was called in before the country broke up, you know, and they said, oh, you know, they killed 600 of us and threw us in a common grave. And I thought I missed something on the news. I said, really? I said, you know, when did that happen? Oh, about 700 years ago. I've been in Greece. I've been in Athens when Merkel was against bailing out Greek banks and they were dressed up as Nazis walking down the street, you know, protesting. So, I mean, yes, old grudges in Europe remain to this day. I mean, they're still there.
While the West clings desperately to its crumbling financial order, the BRICS nations are moving at lightning speed to reshape the global economy. And their strategy spells a tidal wave of demand for silver. China, Russia, Brazil, India, and South Africa aren't just talking about alternatives to the dollar anymore. They're acting aggressively. China is leading the charge, stockpiling massive amounts of gold to prepare for a new trade system backed by real assets, not promises. But here's the part almost no one is talking about. Silver won't be left behind. As BRICS nations create commodity-backed trade networks, silver's role as both a monetary and industrial asset will surge. You can't build a new monetary order without trust, and you can't fuel a 21st century economy without silver powering the technologies that run it. As the dollar loses its grip on global commerce, the demand for real, tangible, universally trusted assets like silver is going to explode. The shift is already happening, but once it hits critical mass, silver won't just appreciate steadily. It will detonate, catching all but the most prepared investors off guard.
And for people that don't understand about de Gaulle, he in 1966, he ordered all Americans out, ordered all NATO stuff out. France is the third largest nuclear power all on its own. France is still, in my opinion, still basically dealing with Napoleon's loss. To create the European community, the documents have been declassified. The CIA was funding the whole thing. They wanted Europe to band together as a bulwark against Russia's communism. And de Gaulle objected. And so he finally agreed, only after they threatened to cut off all Marshall Plan to France. He agreed to accept Germany in, but not the British. Britain wasn't allowed to join the EU until after de Gaulle died. If you take the train underneath the channel, where did the Brits have it stop at? Waterloo Station.
When the United States weaponized its financial system, locking countries out of SWIFT, freezing reserves, slapping sanctions left and right, it thought it was securing its dominance. Instead, it triggered the greatest wave of de-dollarization the world has ever seen. Nations like Russia, China, Iran, and countless others realized overnight that their dollar holdings weren't assets. They were liabilities, subject to political whim. The backlash has been swift and severe, with countries scrambling to establish new systems that bypass the dollar entirely. And silver is poised to benefit in ways few are prepared for. In a world where trust in fiat evaporates, tangible, universally recognized assets become the new foundation of trade. Gold is the obvious centerpiece. But silver, with its monetary history and massive industrial relevance, becomes the supporting pillar. As de-dollarization accelerates, demand for silver in global commerce could surge beyond anything we've ever modeled. The financial weaponization that Washington thought would secure its empire may end up lighting the fuse under the biggest silver boom in modern history.
Let's see. Do I want Germany, France, Netherlands? It's nothing changed. So the problem here is that government's default, and all the research I've done, and how does this really happen? It's not the quantity of debt. That's kind of a misnomer. We could have a $5 quadrillion debt. That's not the issue. The issue is when people lose confidence in the government. It could be $5 trillion. It could be $34 trillion. It could be $60 trillion. That doesn't matter. It's kind of like what I said about the Louvre Accord. When all these governments are in these Ponzi schemes, they have to sell new debt to pay off the old. And the problem comes when nobody wants to buy the new debt. Then you can't pay off the old. And that's when it comes crashing down. And Europe is, it's just a basket case. It's far worse than the United States or anything else. The only country that's even maybe on the same level of a crisis is Japan. The Japanese are different. They have more confidence in the government because the emperor used to be God. I used to be in Tokyo a lot. You go to dinner with some of the old guys, the head of, different companies and the big ones, and they get a few drinks in them and they go, the emperor's still God. Yeah. Okay. So Europe is fragmented. Everything they promised has been basically undone. They promised it wouldn't become a dictatorship, and because it would require 100% consensus. So Hungary didn't want to vote. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to change that, you know, because Hungary won't give money to Ukraine. So little by little, they've wheedled down the, you know, it is a dictatorship. That's it. Although they call Putin a dictator and all this stuff, actually the only two heads of state that the people directly vote for was Putin and the United States. The rest of them are all parliamentary. So the heads of the parties appoint them, like Canada. I hear a lot of complaints from Canadians, you know, well, we didn't pick, you know, Carney, the politicians do. And nobody stands for election. Ursula in the EU, she's never been elected to anything. And all the people that behind the, you know, the curtain to make up the laws and the commission, none of them stand for election. So, you know, Europeans, this is why I think you're I do a lot of podcasts in Croatia, Serbia, Italy, Netherlands, all over the place. And I hear the same thing. You know, it's always maybe different reasons, but many people are getting frustrated with Brussels. The climate, you know, issues, then you have the migrant crisis. And these were all things that were imposed upon them, that they did not have the right to vote for this stuff.
As the world fixates on the flashy headlines about Bitcoin and central bank digital currencies, China is quietly laying the foundation for something far more powerful, a digital yuan backed by real assets like gold and potentially silver too. Oh, this isn't just about making payments faster. It's about rewriting the rules of global trade. By tying its digital currency to hard commodities, China could create an unstoppable magnet for countries desperate to escape the dollar shadow. And while gold will dominate the headlines, silver is the stealth asset that could ride the coattails of this seismic shift. Why? Because silver doesn't just shine in vaults. It powers the very technology that will make these digital trade networks possible. From blockchain infrastructure to smart grids and advanced communications, silver's industrial applications will surge as nations move into a new era of commodity-backed commerce. The rise of the digital yuan isn't just a threat to the dollar. It's a shot of adrenaline straight into the heart of the silver market, setting the stage for a price explosion most investors can't even imagine yet.
Yes, I think so. Look, this is more or less, we go through these events historically, like the American Revolution. All right. There were people who were against the king, then others were for him, etc. And, you know, not until Paine wrote his Common Sense did he flip the majority to against the king. So we need that watershed event yet. But you still have people not, you know, they thinking, oh, I'll get Social Security, they're going to take care of me. It's not going to be there. I have one girl who works in our company. Her mother worked for Social Security, and her mother even told her, it's not going to be there for you. So I would say that, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but it, you know, we have to be mindful of what these problems are so that we, when we come to this period, we can basically say, okay, fine. Look, we've tried all these different types. Let's do it right this time.
History doesn't repeat itself perfectly, but when it comes to stagflation, it sure does rhyme. In the 1970s, soaring inflation combined with stagnant economic growth triggered a massive flight into precious metals. Gold stole the spotlight, but silver delivered the real fireworks, catapulting from under $2 to nearly $50 in less than a decade. Fast forward to today, and we're standing on the edge of an eerily similar setup, only bigger, faster, and far more dangerous. Inflation is ripping through economies despite official numbers being massaged and manipulated. Growth is stalling out, debt is suffocating the system, and central banks are trapped in a tightening, loosening death spiral. This is textbook stagflation on steroids. And if history is any guide, silver won't just participate in the rally, it will lead it with violent, breathtaking moves. When investors realize that bonds, stocks, and even real estate can't protect them from the twin jaws of inflation and recession, they'll flood into hard assets. And just like in the 70s, silver's low starting price and tiny market size will turn every dollar of new investment into a price spike that few will see coming, but none will be able to stop.
Look, I mean, you want to go and become a citizen in Zurich, you have to learn to speak, you know, German. You had to have skills. That's why a lot of the, I saw it only with Brexit in Britain, most of the Indians voted, you know, for Farage. Why? Because they had to have English. They had to have some sort of a talent. Most of them were in medical to get in. You know, and they objected, just open these borders. These people don't speak English or anything else and have nothing to offer. I had to do all this. Same thing here. I saw in Florida. I mean, you live down here where, you know, there've been a lot of Mexicans that are legal, you know, and they speak English. They had to learn, you know, offer a trade or something, to get in. Same thing. They object to all these other people coming in, making them look bad.
While most people are busy worrying about stock prices and inflation rates, a much bigger disaster is brewing just beneath the surface. The total collapse of the pension and banking systems, and it's coming faster than anyone expects. Armstrong warns that by 2032, we're headed for a full-scale financial reset, where the old structures simply won't survive. Pension funds, already stretched to the breaking point by low interest rates and unrealistic promises, are now facing a double hit: market losses and runaway inflation. Banks, once seen as pillars of stability, are increasingly fragile, propped up by confidence alone and bleeding under the surface. And when that confidence finally evaporates, there won't be enough lifeboats for everyone. Physical silver, real, tangible, hold-in-your-hand silver, will become a critical survival asset in the chaos. Unlike digital bank balances or pension promises, silver can't be frozen, bailed in, or inflated away. It exists outside the collapsing system. When the public finally realizes their retirement funds are vapor and their banks are insolvent, the mad scramble for real assets will make today's silver prices look laughably cheap. Those who prepare now will be shielded. Those who wait will be shut out.
This is just, they make these decisions without any idea. I mean, yes, okay, fine. Birth rates were declining. So as the birth rates decline, all these pension funds are Ponzi schemes. They kept counting on, you know, more of the next generation to pay for the other one, because they're not taking your money and actually saving it. They're spending it anyhow. So they let all these people in, thinking, okay, fine, they'll pay taxes, whatever. They don't speak the same language. It's not... when people came here, they came here for a better life. And they assimilated. When I was in meetings with... in Europe, I told them, I said, they don't understand what made America really great. I said, it was discrimination. You go, oh, my God, how could you say that? I said, because it was fair. Whoever was the last off the boat didn't get a job until they spoke English.
The world is waking up to a brutal reality. There simply isn't enough silver to meet what's coming. For years, the mining industry has been warning of shrinking output, with major silver mines depleting faster than they can be replaced. At the same time, industrial demand has been exploding thanks to green energy, electric vehicles, advanced electronics, and now national defense projects ramping up worldwide. For four straight years, the silver market has been running a structural deficit, meaning more silver is being consumed than mined. Above-ground inventories are vanishing at a pace that should terrify any serious investor. We're not talking about some minor imbalance that can be smoothed over with higher prices. We're talking about a full-blown shortage, one that mining companies can't simply flip a switch to solve. New silver projects take years, even decades, to bring online. And with government regulations tightening and ore grades declining, the pipeline is bone dry. When investment demand collides with industrial panic buying, there will be no buffer left. The world's available silver will be drained almost overnight. And prices won't just rise. They'll skyrocket in a frenzy unlike anything the market has ever witnessed.
Well, it's a more of a negotiating chip at this stage in the game. Will Swift survive? Look, I think we're looking at the collapse of the world financial system as we know it. Our computer's been projecting that for like 2032. And because you're looking at the collapse of all these forms of government, the worst form of government it is basically this parliamentary Republican type idea. For example, I mean, we are never asked, shall we go to war with Russia or China or anything else? They just do this. This is a Republican representative. Do they really represent us? they represent whoever's paying them the most, basically. And that's been the problem throughout history. I would advocate more of a direct democracy, which is closer to like Switzerland, where people at least get to vote on a referendum. Parliamentary systems are even much worse. Because like I said, the head of a state you don't even get to pick who it is. So all of this is coming to a head. As the economics, look, we've been in these Ponzi schemes since basically World War II. And look, Keynes had said, fine, you can run a deficit to help balance out the economy. He never advocated year after year. But that's what we have. And people ask me about, can you go back to a gold standard? Not under the political system we have. Because basically what happens is we have to change the political system. A Democrat wouldn't know how to run. You're going to vote for me and I'll give you this. If you're on a fixed exchange rate, you can't do that. All right. So you're going to have to come back to, vote for me because I'm a better manager than he is. So we're in this socialistic agenda, particularly Europe, even more so in the United States. They don't know how to run unless they're promising, lollipops and a free car or something. So that's got to change. So it's the whole thing. It's, revising the monetary system is not going to work unless we also change the political system. We have to get back to common sense and practical. And you're seeing it. When Trump was elected, has been really a contagion, and you're seeing it in Europe. The AfD, they're a bunch of right-wing Nazis. Now they're the largest party.
There's a moment in every financial crisis when the masses finally wake up. And when they do, it's always too late. Armstrong warns that once the general public realizes the fiat money experiment has failed, there will be a panic into precious metals like we haven't seen in our lifetimes. In 1980, it took double-digit inflation and an oil shock to send silver from under $6 to nearly $50 almost overnight. In 2011, all it took was a whisper of European debt crisis and loose Federal Reserve policies to ignite a furious rally. But this time, the catalysts are bigger, the financial system is weaker, and the public is angrier and more desperate than ever. When people realize their savings are evaporating, their retirement dreams are dead, and their trust in governments and banks was misplaced, they will rush for any lifeboat they can find. And silver, still affordable today but impossibly scarce tomorrow, will be one of the first assets to vanish from the market. Buying silver now is like grabbing a ticket to the last lifeboat before the stampede begins, because once the panic hits, the doors will slam shut and those left outside won't stand a chance.
I've dealt with heads of state. Something's changed. I had conversations with Reagan. I was good friends with Margaret Thatcher. I mean, you could sit down and have intelligent conversations. I don't know one leader out there in Europe that I'd even want to sit down and have a glass of wine with. I shake their hand. I'd feel like I need to take a shower afterward. You know, I don't know any of them. Maybe Orban. Maloney seems to be at least 50-50 to some degree. She was the only one that came over here for Trump's inauguration. But
that's who I would have said.
Everybody else is like, that's just so hostile. Macron doesn't want to settle on trade. Why? Because he wants France to be the cornerstone. He's actually been telling people behind the scenes, I don't know if it's out in the press yet, he will provide a nuclear umbrella to protect Europe, get rid of America. That's why I say he's got a Napoleon complex. This is it. And even when France joined the Euro, you can look this up. They agreed to join, but nobody was allowed to issue any coinage that celebrated their loss at Waterloo. Brussels did issue a commemorative coin, not for circulation. That's how they got around it. And because they don't like France so much because de Gaulle said that the English created, Belgium just to annoy the French. That's what I mean. You have all these resentments in Europe that go back such a long time. But I think that you are looking at a, I would be optimistic that we got a shot at trying democracy for once. But you have to go through this barbed wire crawling stuff to get there. Because the majority of people have to understand the government is dysfunctional.
Political upheaval isn't just a backdrop to financial chaos. It's a direct accelerant, and right now, the world is entering a firestorm. From the rise of anti-establishment leaders like Trump in the U.S. to the surge of nationalist movements across Europe, the political landscape is shifting in ways that terrify the global elites. Every new election, every major protest, every populist victory signals the public's growing rejection of the old economic order. And when political instability erupts, currencies collapse right behind it. Investors instinctively flee to safe havens. And while gold grabs headlines, silver, with its dual role as both a monetary and industrial metal, explodes even harder. Political chaos isn't just likely, it's inevitable, baked into the debt, the anger, and the broken promises that now define the modern world. As governments lose control, as social unrest surges, as confidence in leadership evaporates, silver will become a beacon for those looking to escape the financial wreckage. The link between political upheaval and silver booms isn't speculation, it's history, and we are about to watch it repeat on a scale no one is prepared for.
I saw how it works. They all collect together. All right. So they're all on, like, you take the Russian collapse and, they're all in it. They're all in the same trade. And that's why I say that, the majority must always be wrong because they provide the fuel for the correction. Either way. But it's, I saw it from, the early 80s. We were all in Geneva dealing with OPEC money. Then it was like, oh, Japan. Everybody runs over there. Okay, Japan. Then that goes bust in 89. Oh, what's next? Oh, Southeast Asia. Yeah. Then, they peaked that out in 94. Oh, what's that? Oh, the euro's coming in 98. And there he runs.
Silver's window of opportunity is closing faster than anyone realizes. And Armstrong's final warning is chilling in its simplicity. Silver will soon become unobtainable. Not because it won't exist, but because when the real panic hits, there simply won't be enough to go around. Dealers will run dry, premiums will skyrocket, and the price you see on a screen will become meaningless compared to the price you'll actually have to pay, if you can even find it. Those who wait for mainstream confirmation, for news anchors and financial advisors to tell them it's time to buy, will be left empty-handed. The moment the herd wakes up, the physical silver market will seize up instantly, and the era of cheap silver will end forever. If you understand what's coming, war, hyperinflation, a BRICS gold standard, and the collapse of trust in fiat money, you know that action must come before recognition. Make sure you're on the right side of history. If you found this breakdown helpful, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next critical update. And always remember, this is not financial advice. Speak to a licensed professional before making any investment decisions.